Awesome. So Matteo, thank you so much for joining us. You've got a little
Thanks
bit of
for inviting me.
an eclectic crowd today. There are some people who know, at least by CS standards, quite a bit of category theory, such as Jacob and Sam, and some of us who are sort of novices. I've like worked through the first chapter of the categorical topology textbook, and done some introductory exercises, but nothing too complicated. But everybody has hopefully enough of a math background to follow the talk, and I'm certainly looking forward to it. So with that, I'll let you take it away. And again, thank you very much for joining us.
All right. Thank you for inviting me. It was really cool to receive an email inviting me to speak. It's the first time that happened, so thanks for giving me the
You can
thrill.
pretend that we are more prestigious than we really are.
Yeah, I'm telling everyone that I'm giving a talk at MIT. That's what
Perfect.
I'm saying. And okay, I'm starting sharing my screen. Okay. I'll wait. And yeah, so I kept this talk super lightweight math-wise, but since there's 40 minutes of questions, I think it's not a problem. We can go into as much depth as you want. And so let me start. So this is going to be a talk about cybernetics and how we at Strathclyde, so this little university in Glasgow, and in particular in the MSP group. I was talking with Max before, and also Jules Hedges is from the same group and was already at your seminar. And so it's about the way we see this cybernetic thing from the point of view of category theory, or the way we'd like to describe cybernetics using category theory. So just to see, like, to set some kind of common background, what is cybernetics is a very, very vast science, though one could say it's more a branch of philosophy and mathematics than a true science. So this is the definition I found by Kolmogorov that I kind of like, because it is science concerned with the study of systems of any nature which are capable of receiving, storing, and processing information so as to use it for control. Okay, so the most important word in this definition is actually the last one. Indeed, the word cybernetics itself is derived from kubernao, which is Greek for governing, controlling, steering. Okay, and this was invented, like the word was invented by some guy in the 1800s, but then reused by Norbert Wiener when he had to find this a name for this new science that philosophers and mathematicians and engineers and social scientists and so many different people were discussing in the 50s. So the main idea of cybernetics is that a lot of systems look like this. A lot of the situations, like system is a word I'm going to say a lot, so let's try to not oversay it. So many situations are like this. There's like a loop, which is called the cybernetic loop indeed, where a controller is involved. Okay, you should imagine a controller like someone or some entity having some kind of agency and goal over a given system they're trying to control. Okay, so what happens? The controller is getting input from a sensor and is giving, like, some action to another system. Okay, this is the system we want to control. Okay, so you see what's happening. I have a sensor. I see what's happening in the system. On the other hand, I have something like a lever, and I can move the lever based on the reading from the sensor. Okay, so there's this difference thing, which means that the controller is able to not only read the sensor, but also compare it with what we had before. Okay, so I know, like, what's the difference between the so-called signal and actual control. Okay, and this is like the classical way to represent this stuff, and the way we like to represent it is like this. Okay, which is not at all a big improvement if you just look at the picture, but the cool thing is that whereas this is an informal diagram, which I mean is presupposes some kind of intuition about it, but it's not at all useful to actually do in cybernetics, except as a philosophical idea. This is an actual mathematical object with a defined semantics and a perfectly formal behavior. Okay, so this is already a specification of a cybernetic system once you know how to actually read that. Okay, as you can see, there's everything we have in the other loop. So there's a controller here, which is sending some action to the other system. Okay, so the control system, and the system is receiving an action and sending out an observation, so a sensor reading. And then the controller has stored the action they chose to enact. And this is the difference we found here, okay? And this long feedback is, again, this long feedback here, okay? So nothing different, same intuitions, but much more sharp mathematical meaning. Oh, so I'm sort of assuming you're kind of familiar with what a string diagram is. In case you are lost, just make noise and we can look at it a bit more in detail. I find string diagrams extremely intuitive because they're like how you would draw things. Indeed, everything is riddled with string diagrams in engineering. And the only difference with category theory is that we actually have a specific meaning to assign to things, but the notation is exactly the same. Just a quick, super basic, wires are things and boxes are functions. Okay, let's say there's processes. Okay, so you have these things going in controller. Yeah.
As an example, if you were reasoning about like a cyber-physical system, then your other system would be the plant, right?
Would be
the... Because you have like a controller and a plant in cyber-physical systems.
Yeah.
So like in a nuclear reactor, your controller would be whatever discrete automata or processes you have that do the reasoning, and then your plant would be like the actual vat with the water, et cetera.
Exactly.
And that would be your other system in this diagram, correct?
Yes, yes. I should have gave an example. That's a good idea. A plant is a perfectly good example, but what we do is actually like game theory or machine learning, but like a car, a plane, everything which has someone steering the wheel inside is a cybernetic system. And okay, but we won't stay a lot on this cybernetic definition because it can get very philosophical. So the plan of the talk is more or less to follow what I actually described, like what I wrote on my blog. You can go on my blog, which is myname.wordpress.com. And so I plan to follow that, and there's many more details there. So if you're curious after, and you can always go there and consult. And then there's two papers which came out this year about this stuff. And these are, I think, more mathematical detail, but more dry from the point of view of intuition. So these are if you really want to know how the mathematics of these things work. And these are if you really want to know how this thing work. And then, of course, I can just tell you anything else you want to know about this stuff, if I can answer, actually. So let's start. What is this feedback systems is optic things? So first of all, what is a feedback system? So a feedback system is what I represented here as a string diagram already, but imagine this as an informal notion of a system, so some kind of like thing that behaves, whose dynamics happens in like two passes. So first of all, there's what we call the forward pass, which I call also the do pass, which is simply a map, a procedure, some kind of evolution in which a stimuli is received from the environment and an action is produced. Okay, so this is very similar to what the controller was doing before. And then there's some kind of storage of memory. So we remember what we've seen and what we like gave back to the, imagine there's an environment here. And then at some point I receive a feedback, okay? So this feedback can be pretty much anything. What makes it a feedback is the way we use it, okay? So we use it as a way to judge the action, and in particular, the way we answered the stimuli we received from the environment, okay? So we should imagine that some point here, the environment is like bending the wire and telling us how good our actions were, okay? So it's giving me some kind of signal that I can read and use to infer like the goodness of my actions according to some kind of metric that I have. And so what happens, I read the feedback and I compare it with what I did, so I can actually know what the feedback was about. And then I also propagate the feedback, okay? So this propagate function is doing two things, actually. It's like telling me how good I was, but also telling the rest of the environment, so whatever is going on downstream here, how good they were, okay? Or at least I take out my part of feedback and return the rest to the rest of the system unaltered. And yeah, so I sort of end wave this, but here this diagram is should be read like this, okay, guided by the arrows. Okay, so you should imagine the stimuli arrives, actions are taken, feedback is received, and feedback is propagated. Okay, so every diagram I will draw from now on assumes that time is flowing clockwise. Okay, so you should imagine dynamics happening somehow like this. So this is sort of a dynamical system. If you know what a dynamical system is in mathematics, something super simple is almost embarrassing. It's just a map from a space to itself, okay? And the idea is that this is a space of states and the map is encoding some kind of evolution of states. And it takes a state and gives me another state, which you can interpret as the next state of the system, okay? And so this is sort of what actually we want to do, except that it's not a feedback system, okay? So you see that the dynamic of feedback system is much more convolved in a sense. And the interesting thing is that oftentimes actually dynamical systems factors as feedback systems. What I mean by this is that like this black box evolution can actually be opened and divided in some things that make us realize we're dealing actually with a kind of feedback system instead. So we have a state coming in a dynamical system and a state coming out, and what's happening in between. So in many cases, the first thing that happens is that some kind of action is taken, okay? And this is like an agent moving around in the space X, or it could be a particle doing some kind of dynamic evolution in a physical space or whatever. Then what I do is I observe the result of my action, okay? And this usually means that my system has, so like this space X, so I have X, which is my space of state, comes with some kind of observable, okay? Where R can be like real numbers or whatever you want to observe. And that's what I observe. So that's what I'm actually interested in the system. And then based on the measurement that I did in the observe step, I actually produce an X state, okay? So this happens in many, many dynamical systems. For example, Hamiltonian systems, you have the state, which is a pair of a position and a momentum vector, okay? Which is telling me where I am and where I'm going. And then you can imagine the action as being basically just like, look at P, okay? My action is I move an infinitesimal step in the direction of the prescribed by my momentum now. Okay, and then my observation now is, look at Hamiltonian now, and what is it telling me about the dynamics that surrounds me? So about the world that surrounds me. Okay, so this Hamiltonian is like, provides me an infinitesimal evaluation of the possible directions that I have at this moment. Okay, so I observe that, and then I can kind of decide, for example, because I happened to evolve like Hamiltonian system. I decided to minimize my Hamiltonian, okay, or to use it in the way that the Hamilton equations prescribe me. So this is the kind of feedback that I receive. And then based on this, I decide what is my next state, which is going to be like the next, the infinitesimally next point, the point which is infinitesimally close to me and in the right direction that the Hamiltonian is telling me to go. Oh, I see there's someone in the chat. Okay. So a dynamical system can be often seen as a feedback system. So what I'm actually interested about, what we are doing in MSP is twofold. So games are probably the first example of feedback system that we stumbled upon. So you should imagine games, the way we envision game theory is as all the study of all those situations which have agents interacting in some way, and then these agents receive payoff, and we're interested in knowing how the agent should behave to maximize their payoff. Okay, and this is the framework and the feedback system that a game is usually interpreted as. So there's a state of the game, a play function that tells me, like, I observe the state of the game and what's my move, okay, what card I play and so on. And then at some point, the environment is giving me back a payoff. And, oh no, ooh. And what the propagate function is what we traditionally call coplay. And we can interpret then the rest of the payoff that I don't use, I don't look at, as an externality, as something that my dynamics produce, but it's not intended for me. Okay, it's for the rest. So this could be like CO2 pollution, this could be extra goods that I produce, could be waste, whatever. It could be just payoffs for other players and so on. And the second kind of feedback systems we're very interested in too is learners. So we call learners machine learning models, okay? So in general, all those things that we think of as things that are learning, okay? And I think a very cool thing that turned out to be kind of true is that these two things are really, really related. So a learner can also be seen as a feedback system. So I say here, there are some things missing here, so it's kind of a bit awkward to look at, but later we'll see it's more compelling. But we can envision a learner as something like a function, okay? Just trying to be, this is the function I'm trying to predict, okay? I'm trying to classify images, say. So this is the function that takes in an input image and tells me it's a cat, it's a dog, it's a dolphin, whatever. So imagine this is the map that me as a machine learning model, I'm actually using now, okay, as my hypothesis. So I receive the image of maybe a cat, I say it's a cat, and then here the trainer has a loss function, which is telling me how good I was at predicting that, okay? So was that really a cat, or was it a dog or something else entirely? So this tells me how good I was. And then the propagate step in machine learning is literally the back propagation. Okay, so I propagate this loss gradient. Okay, so this gradient telling me how I should have changed my map in order to actually do the right prediction. And I correct based on the actual map that I'm using here, and I give it back to the rest of the model, okay? Because it could be a composite model, say, and that's where actually the usefulness of this framework comes into play, okay? So I can imagine this as a learner or as a piece of a learner, like a neural network.
Mateo, can I give an example and you can tell me if it's correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you had like a cyber physical system with sensors and actuators, then the input would be the sensed state, the sensed physical state, that would be like the stimulus. And then the output would be the command to the actuator. But then the payoff, or whatever you call this, the feedback would be the difference between what you instructed the actuator to do and what actually occurred, right? And then that would get fed back into the sensors as that feedback. Is that basically correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. So the main mathematical story behind these feedback systems and for cybernetics is that they are exactly what optics are. Are you familiar already with optics? Did Jules?
Sort of, but it would probably be good if you...
I'm definitely doing a refresh. I just don't know if you knew the name. So optic is the generalization of a lens, okay? But it's simply this picture here. So an optic is like the abstract form of what I told you before, a feedback system. So an optic is something that looks like this. So I have a pair of, let's say, sets on both boundaries. So an optic is, first of all, is a kind of morphism in a certain category. So it's a thing that goes from one left boundary to one right boundary, okay? So, and these boundaries are made of pairs of sets, okay? And it's simply a pair of maps. One is called the view and the other is called the update or the get or the put. There are different conventions. But the central point is that the first map goes from X to this M times Y. You can read this as times. And the update goes the other way around. Okay. So this is exactly how a feedback system works. And you see, like, the only weird thing, and I'm not definitely going into tonight, is this M here that I colored in blue, because this M doesn't live in the same world as the rest of the black thing, okay? So you should imagine this as something else which gets attached thanks to this kind of times operator, and that mediates the interaction between the view and the update, okay? So what happens is that I get an X, I produce a Y, and I kind of memorize an intermediate state M, okay, M for memory. And then when I receive an R, I can access this M and I get an S, okay. But this blue thing is not in the same world as the black things, okay. This has really no consequence whatsoever in today's talk. But just to be clear about it, it's not the same. And what's important in optics, and this is very important, is so this blue wire is a private thing, okay? So I don't say it. So an optic is not just a pair of function, but it's also an equivalent class, which means that I consider two optics to be exactly the same if I can obtain one from the other by simply sliding one piece of it along this blue wire, okay? So imagine that the update of one optic is actually composed of two maps like this. So first I receive, like, I look at my memorized state, I do some computation, and then I feed it to the real update map. Okay, now what I can do is slide this up and actually consider it a part of a view, okay? So instead of processing the state after I memorize it, I first process it and then I memorize it, okay? And then I feed it to the same exact update map, okay? So you see that the computations that are happening on both sides are completely equal, okay? It's the same things are happening. And in particular, from the external point of view, there's no way to tell from, like, just reading these two outputs that something different has been going on inside. And so that's why we consider this to be two equal optics on the nose, even though, like, as a pair of function, they're different, okay? This is V and this is F composite U, and this is V composite F and U, okay? So on the nose, there are different pairs of maps, but as optics, we want to consider them equal. So we do this. And then, since I told you that optics are a kind of morphism in a category, if you pretty much know, if you ever read the definition of a category, you know that the main thing about a category is that morphism compose, okay? So if I have an optic like this, and then I have another optic, which is like, and they share like a middle boundary, then I can simply consider them to be one optic from the very left boundary to the right left, to the very right boundary. Okay. And graphically, well, when I draw optics, there's not even like a thing to say, like, because when I draw them, they're already composite. So there's almost nothing to say.
The composition's not necessarily commutative, right? Because, for instance, the game where I get to play first and then you take a turn is different from the one where you get to play first and then I take
a turn. Yeah, absolutely. So, like, there's even a more prior reason, which is if I have, like, three different types on the three boundaries, then there's not even, it doesn't even make sense to compose this two optics in the other sense. Okay, they wouldn't share the middle boundary. So
yeah, that makes
there's
sense.
Not even like such a thing as a commutative thing here, and unless they were all the same. So it's like super, super directed usually. But yeah, you said a correct thing. And this is evidently what sequential composition of feedback systems wants to be. Okay, because this is literally my system does a thing, and then there's the next system in line which receives what my system did and does something else to it. Okay. Well, feedback goes the other way around. Okay. Because imagine you're like producing a good, and this is what's happening in the forward pass. So you add things, layers out of it. When I want to give you feedback, I give it from the out in. Okay. From the outside in. And so feedback goes the other way. So it's like unpacking my good and giving me successive feedback on the way I produced it. Okay. So this makes sense. And not only I can compose things in sequence, but I can also compose them in parallel. Okay, so what happens if I have, there's my system, there's your system, and we do our thing completely independently and possibly at the same time, then we still get a composite system, but it's not like I feed the result of my computation or my process as the input of yours, I simply do my thing while you do yours, okay? This is called a tensor product in category theory. It's usually represented like a tensor like this. And graphically, tensor products are just represented as putting things like side by side, okay? So every time I have two wires like this, especially like if you imagine there's a single morphism like this, then the intended meaning is that I'm tensoring these two morphisms. Okay, so I'm considering them as happening together. And with a little bit of, like with some more manipulations that we did before for sequential composition, I can also see how the tensor product of optics work. Okay, so I simply kind of slide the view parts as to be together and slide the update parts as to be together here, okay. But if you follow like the paths of information, you see that what's happening here is exactly what's happening here. Okay, so I'm just repackaging these two optics into one so that I can say it's one composite optic, but it's exactly the same thing as the thing on the left. And again, this models parallel compositional feedback system more or less by definition, okay, because they look so much the same. And thirdly, there are two special kinds of optics, which are those that have the unit wires as either input or output. Okay, so you should think of as the unit wire, something we don't usually draw. So I drew it here in gray just to make you see what it means that a state is an optic from this unit, but here I didn't even draw it. Okay, so the unit wire is something that is the identity in the parallel composition thing, okay? So it means that wire is doing nothing, okay? And you need it as you need zero in for addition or the identity morphisms in categories. So it's just so useful to have around a thing that does nothing that we usually have it. And indeed, for optics, this thing really shines because it's so useful to have it. Indeed, if you work out like the definition, you see that an optic from the unit corresponds to a thing that initializes the forward pass. So it gives me like an initial X, an initial state, and then takes care of dumping whatever feedback is remaining after all the dynamics happened. Okay, this is a more subtle point if you're not used to monoidal categories, but this is something useful to have. And even more interesting,
why is it called the unit? Because I thought unit just meant you couldn't divide it anymore. Like an abstract algebra, isn't a unit like an element that can't be divided any further or something like that?
Oh, so yeah, there's two uses of unit in algebra. One is that in ring theory, it's like an invertible element, I guess. And yeah, there's another area of math which unit means something which is like a one. Okay, so it's like the identity of a multiplicative thing. Okay,
gotcha.
There's no good reason to call it unit instead of whatever you like.
Okay, no worries. I just want to make sure I was actually calling what you're saying.
Yeah. Good to ask. So we say costates. Costates are the dual thing to states. Instead of being maps from the unit, are maps into the unit. It sounds absurd until you work out that such thing is exactly what allows you to bend the wire and to start the feedback pass after you did the action pass. Okay, so you have a pair of maps here mediated by a blue thing, so something that is storing a state temporarily. And so what this does is I take the result of my dynamics, I convert it, so I store it, and then I produce a feedback out of it, okay? For technical reason, this is just not like a single wire, but in many cases, it is like a single wire with a box in it, okay? So it's just, for all purposes, this is just a map from Y to R, okay? Something that converts actions into actual feedbacks, okay? So these are super useful. And it's neither, like there's such a neat duality between them. And so the main usefulness of states and costates, they can actually close a system. So far I showed you things with dangling wires on the left and on the right, but like usually systems are open, but at the same time you really want them to be closed, because an open system is very much underspecified, okay? So it's good to know how to do both. At some point you want to close it, or at least pretend it is closed, and that's what a state and a costate allows you to do. So if we peer inside, we can see what's going on now. So if I have a closed system, what happens is that I know how to start my dynamics, so I have an initial state, I do my stuff, I produce an action, and this action gets evaluated by the rest of the environment, okay, or the system. And then this feedback is gave back to the system, which evaluates the action it just produced and produce some other feedback, which is fed back to the rest of the system until it is disposed, because we did all the things we could do with it, okay? So with respect of this piece of the system, this left part is an initial state, or it's just like the past of my system, whatever happened before I actually entered the scene. And this is a continuation, okay? So it's what literally allows me to continue the dynamic and go from the forward to the backward pass, okay? Also, bear in mind that these and these can be like actually very big, because they could be the composite of many pieces of a system with a final, let's say, trivial costate, or on the other side, many pieces of a system and an initial trivial state. So I say initial state here, but this initial state could be like the result of a lot of computations. It's just that from the point of view of this system, this map is basically just taking one state, okay? It's feeding me the state that I'm actually going to have and be in, okay? So this is more like, you should imagine this as things that actually do things and not just static pieces there, okay? So now I want to give you...
quick question. On the previous slide, the leftmost vertical wire should go up, not down, right?
This blue one.
Yeah.
So this is a bit counterintuitive, but no, because this is still an optic. This is still an optic, see? And in an optic, the blue wire goes down, okay? Yeah. So we can talk later about, like, what about wires that actually go up, which are really interesting to have. But this is storing something from the initial state. Okay. So it's like I give you an X and I memorize something. And then I use that something I memorized to actually do this disposal of feedback.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So this doesn't close the loop, which would be nice to have indeed. So I want to give you a little bit of intuition about how I look at this interaction between composite and whole system. So we start with, let's say we want to model a situation like a plant that is producing whatever goods or energy. So we have like, we're modeling some world that we're interested into. And what we do is we draw a boundary, okay, in this. So we say everything which is within this boundary is what I consider my system, okay, is what I actually want to model in a sense. And what is outside is what I now call the environment. So whatever is still involved in the dynamics, but it's not what I'm actually looking at, okay. And this boundary is open in a sense, so it's not a perfect hermetic ceiling, but we can exchange things with the environment, otherwise it could be really boring. Okay, and this is interesting to look at because it suggests us what actually means to close a system. So it's not sufficient to give a state and a costate. But we need to account for the fact that while our system is existing, also the environment is continuing existing. And in particular, there are things which are outside the system that we cannot see, but are like that make, like connect the future and the past of my system and of the rest of the things that interact with my system without the possibility of accessing them, okay? So it turns out that the correct way to call about the environment of a system in this framework of optics is by means of this comb, okay, comb shape. So we call them comb because they can have many teeth actually, so they really look like comb. But this is a one-toothed comb, and it's something that a system can be plugged in, and it literally wraps the system and closes it, okay. All right, so I see I'm really, really behind schedule time-wise. Tell me what I should do.
I mean, I think we certainly have enough material to move to Q&A if you're ready. But if there's something else you want to cover that you think is important, then that's fine with me too, whatever you prefer.
Yeah, I could maybe just like give you a very quick review of this second part because it's actually like where the meat is, I think. So I told you about cybernetics being interested in systems which are controlled, okay? So another way to say this is really dear to cyberneticists, is they are reactive or purposeful. So they are systems that can adapt to their environment by changing their dynamics, and they actually have a goal to pursue. So it's not just that they do something. They observe, and they change what they do, which is much more interesting in my opinion. So lots of examples though, I think we actually covered them already, but you can see like games and learners and like all controlled systems, it's very generic as a class of systems, as things that do a thing like that. Okay, it's not just that they play, it's not just you play a game, you have a strategy and you change your strategy based on the payoff you observe, you know, in actual play of the game, okay? And so the game is not just a system, is a system with an agent in it, or actually many agents, so the players, and they have a goal which is going to shape the way they actually play the game, and they're going to play the game another time, okay? So what I'm really interested in as a categorical cyberneticist is controlled feedback system. So it's not just to have this dynamic. I also have another kind of dynamic, which is relative to the agents participating in dynamics, okay? So we still have the do and propagate maps in a controlled feedback system, but these are not parameterized and co-parameterized maps, okay? So let's look at the do map because it's easy to understand. So I do receive stimuli from the environment, but the way I process them is not always the same, but it depends on something which is called the control or the parameter or the policy or the strategy, okay? And so this is something that can change and can tell me different ways to answer the same stimuli, okay? And now I still memorize the state, but now in the feedback pass, when I have to propagate feedback, it's not just that I give it back to the rest of the environment, but I keep a private observation of whatever feedback I got, okay? And then what happens is that I can feed a kind of cybernetic feedback, so the cybernetic loop we started with, into this picture by having two more maps, which I call plan and adjust, because there are, an interesting thing is that this exact cycle is something that was studied from the 50s. It's called the ODA or PDCA framework for decision making. So this is exactly what the math tells you happens, and this is exactly what people think should happen, which is fantastic in my opinion. But so what happens is just when I see something, then I, so this is like a loop, so it's hard to start somewhere, but imagine like, okay, you choose a control, something happened, you got feedback, and you observe, okay? So what happens is that this control came from a planning phase, okay? You somehow chose that. And this could be like trivial. So you started with a random hypothesis. But now what you do is you confront what you actually chose with what you got as an observation, okay? From your sensors or from your payoffs or whatever is that the environment is giving back to you. And then you can now choose to change or accordingly to the observation, you can change your control, okay? So feedback, whatever you got from the observation and how you process it to the planning phase, okay? And this is the cybernetic loop that we started with the talk, okay? And what's interesting, once we introduce this blue wires, like we extend, we had just one blue wire before, but now we add on a whole new dimension of blue wires. We can do other very important things like coordinate systems across this composition. When we actually build systems using string diagram and category theory, we do a lot of composites from very elementary pieces. But then you run into this problem that you want, like, you have like two identical systems here, which are controlled by the same agent, say, but there's no way for this agent, like for this system and this system to be correlated because they're so far apart, okay? But once we had this new dimension, what happens is that I can say, well, you have a control here and you use it both for this system and for this system. And same for the observation, you want to combine the observations you do here with the observations you do there, okay? And this is an extremely powerful tool, actually. And it solved a lot of problems in open games. And I think I'll skip the last part because I already overindulged your patience. Thank you very much for listening so long.
Matteo, thank you. That was super cool. I have questions, but I want to open it up to the audience. So if somebody else has a question, please just go ahead and unmute and we'll do our best not to step on each other.
Sure, I'll start with one. And I guess it's not necessarily about the content of what you discussed so far, but I'm curious why you're interested in studying this area as opposed to doing a lot of other cool things in category theory.
So personally, I think this is a cool thing in category theory. So there's a lot of interesting math behind this. But it's the cool sweet spot between like pure theory and pure applications. Okay, so we call it applied category theory, but there's a whole spectrum of applications. And I find that I kind of like theory, I kind of like practice, but If you do just practice, then you start to get like to meddle in all these details that are slowing down the really creative parts, and that's kind of boring. If you're doing just theory, then it's just abstract things that at some point bore you because they feel so pointless, even if they're fascinating. But if you do something like that, which is like theory guided by actual things going on and like trying to capture something you see in the world, that's very, very compelling to me. And it feels like there's a lot of things that category theory can do in an area like this, because cybernetics is one of those fields which are like super vast. They encompass so many different things, like from biology to production plants, from plants to plants in a sense. And category theory is just so good at doing this work of looking at two very, very different things and see how they are actually the same if you squint enough. So category theory is just such a good tool for a thing like that. It feels like there is good things to do in an area like this.
Awesome, thank you.
You're welcome.
Matteo, are you familiar with this paper by Leslie Lamport about the ordering of events in distributed systems?
Actually, no, never heard of it.
Okay, so in distributed systems, like the most seminal paper is a paper that Leslie Lamport wrote, and it has some title that's like on clocks and the ordering of events in distributed systems or something. But if you just Google like Leslie Lamport partial mm-hmm. ordering distributed systems, you'll find it. And when I see the parallel composition slide of your presentation, it makes me wonder mm-hmm. if Lamport's results from that paper could be derived from just the definition of parallel composition, because he effectively provides the fairly simple but useful insight that without certain types of synchrony between processes, it's impossible to have a total ordering on events. And if you have a total ordering on events across distributed processes, it implies that you have some like limitations on your network that make it so that agents can't act independently and then reconnect later on. I feel like this is an obvious consequence of the way that you define parallel composition. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, but it might be worth looking at later on.
Okay. So I just like very, very quickly skimmed the paper. And so I don't know exactly the kind of results that he's proving, but if it's a kind of like when you have parallel composition, weird things happen, that's absolutely known in categorical systems theory. So I think here the expert are in Oxford, there's like this famous quantum group where Samson Abramsky and Bob Cookie are working in. Well, to be fair, Bob Cookie moved to a company. But I mean, 10 years ago, this was true. And especially Abramsky recognized that like monoidal categories, which are the abstract framework for the string diagrams where you can draw boxes in parallel and pretend they are actually tensored. They provide a good framework for talking about non-contextual systems, which are those kind of systems in which there's like local consistent behavior, but there's no global consistent behavior. Okay, so it's I don't know if what Lamport found out in the paper is something like that, but sometimes it happens that like each part of the system can make sense of what they see. But if you were like God, look at it from above, you see that the whole system is actually not in an inconsistent state, but in something that cannot be totally described as a whole. And this is very typical of quantum systems. That's what Abramsky and Oxford group are looking at. But there's this famous theorem by Cochin and Specker from the 60s that tells you that if you look at some kind of mathematical properties of the space that the Hilbert space that describes a quantum system, then you find out that it has an internal logic that is not consistent. So what happens is that you can have a quantum system that has states which are like locally consistent, so different qubits are working away, but when you look at all the entanglement and things, you find out that this mixed state and the superposition of things that the quantum system is living in couldn't resolve in a definite state for all the parts of the system, okay? And so there's an inherent contextuality, there's an inherent like inconsistency, if you want to use this word, in the way the quantum things work. And this is super well captured by these monoidal things, okay? Exactly because, exactly for the way the monoidal products work, they can model very well the fact that you have two systems which are connected and you say tensor together, but you cannot decompose them, okay? Or better, you can have something, when you look at them, they can be like in a superposition, okay? That's basically what's happening. I don't know if this answered your question because I went in a completely different direction. But I will read the paper. It sounds very interesting. Also, it's like cited, I don't know, many thousands of times.
So it's one of the most
is an interesting paper.
It's worth reading. It's one of the most famous papers in computer science.
So maybe I think after I read it, I can be more specific.
Yeah, no problem.
I've got a question based on the quantum direction you're going, which I kind of like to ask each of our category speakers, because I'm not really a pure mathematician. I think that it's really cool when you have some math and it lets you look at something in a different way, where you can now like solve a problem that you didn't have a tractable way of doing, and it gives you some more insight. And it sounds like you were just talking about a way in which category monoidal thinking is very helpful for a quantum sense. But I'm curious if there are any particular areas that you think will be really interesting or fruitful for categories. Obviously, cybernetics is one, but I think previous answers to this question is Tyler Bryson was kind of the mindset that, oh, all the people who decided set theory was the way to go back in like the 50s and 60s, they're wrong. And like a lot of math is going to end up being reframed in a categorical perspective. And Jules was saying that to him, the biggest impact area is functional programming. And I'm curious if there's anything that particularly stands out to you. I don't know if that question makes sense.
That's a very good question. No, it is super makes sense, absolutely. I think I have a provocative answer, which is category theory is going to change the way we do math, and especially the way we teach and think about math, okay? And this is happening already in the guise of like this type theory, renewed interest and the formalization of math with proof assistance and so on. And we are realizing that like the way the category theory scaffolds concepts is very powerful, very economical, and we still didn't find something that, this is a bit too much, but we have things that are not very well captured by category theory, but everybody around me is convinced it's just because we didn't try hard enough yet. Okay, so I envision something like maybe not in 10 years, let's say 50 years from now, just to be safe, undergrads will start studying math, not from calculus, but from category theory. Okay, just because you have like such a good tool set then like you can compress a lot of knowledge in the rest of the years, which is I'm sure is going to prove very, very useful to people. When it can just like give you an entire algebra course in a week by telling you, well, this thing is a monoid and this thing is a monoid in another category and this is a functor. It's much, much, much easier when you're familiar with it, okay? So I think this is going to be like the next revolution. How, you know, at some point people understood that calculus was super useful at modeling like so many things. It was a good tool set, you know, the tool set of differential equations, of real numbers, of continuous dynamics and so on. And I think they're going to realize that category theory is providing the same thing for different phenomena, okay? And functional programming is providing like the practical hands-on, I don't know, like the screwdriver and the hammer for doing so, okay? For actually implementing this stuff, okay? As much as, I don't know, Cavalieri integration was doing it in the 1800s.
Awesome. That's a fantastic answer. Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks.
I want to push a little bit more with one question, and I'm happy to open the floor to others. But I think it's inherently difficult to talk about why some new idea is really good to people who don't have a context for it. Like, for example, if you imagine someone who's just learning programming and you show them this cool thing where it's like, yeah, so you can put a line here and a line here and a line here. When you run it, it goes line by line and follows your recipe. And that's sort of a cool thing. And then afterwards, you can tell them about how control flow and if and else statements let you do much more complex things. But it's sort of a bit difficult to see what benefit that gives you until you try it. And going one step further, adding in loops, it's sort of, this is a bit contrived, but it doesn't seem entirely clear how much better it is until you see an example and it really simplifies what you are trying to do. Are there any situations in category theory like this where you were looking at a certain problem and then after looking at it from a categorical way, you thought like, wow, this is so much simpler. I wish everyone else did it this way, or I originally learned it this way. Just to kind of further the point you were saying before about how it's a good tool.
Of course. Well, so this is a tricky question because I think the way something looks easy or hard to you really depends on where you are coming from. Like, it's a state history dependent function, if we want to use a fancy terminology for it. So I learned category theory relatively early in my mathematical career. So it often happened that I was studying something and then I Google it, I look it up and see, oh, this is just a functor here, or this is a universal construction, a thing like that. So it made it easier for me. And I recognize that category theory provided me an economical way to see it, and that's why I advocate for it. But I'm not sure this is actually the best way for people to understand it. I mean, it's not like I'm saying, oh, just go around and say this. Okay, because that worked for me. I don't know if it worked for other people. That said,
okay, that's fair. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. I can give you an example which I think like could be fitting actually, which is when I was learning tie theory. For me, it was really, really helpful to have this categorical intuition about them. So I don't know if you knew, but like tie theory and category theory are basically the same thing. I mean, as much as you can consider two things the same, but they're like different presentations. And tie theory is very verbose in the way that it's usually exposed, because there's a lot of symbols and bookkeeping and so on. And when you're like, haha, that's a good book. When you realize, oh, when I realized that type constructors and elimination rules and so on were just universal constructions in category theory, that really made them click for me. I remember vividly thinking, oh, I see now why you're doing this. And so it gave me like this different way to look at it, because it was presented as a computational rule and so on, which like sort of made sense, but it was fuzzy. But then at some point, like, oh, that's a universal property, so that's why you need this and that, and that's why you get this and that. And that was a really haha moment for me. Yes.
Awesome. Thank you. I have one more follow-up question, but I'm going to open the floor for...
Yeah, thanks for the question, by the way. They're really amazing.
Artem and Sam, or Kai, do any of you guys have any questions?
I had one, if I may. So maybe it's... I'm not sure if it will make sense, you tell me. So what you showed today, and you mentioned the ACT, the Applied Category Theory work in general, seems to be aiming at describing things more than maybe something else, or at least as far as I understand. So there is the cybernetics, for example, which lacked a categorical explanation before, and then someone came and starts like explaining things using this language. So my question is whether, like, you personally, for example, whether you aim at proving new facts or like proving something correct in the field of cybernetics, if you are doing the categorification of cybernetics, for example, or is it more like you just want to describe more and more phenomena from this field, but not necessarily a sort of get to some hard proofs that, you know, prove something correct or some stuff like that, like in the old sense, the old mathematical sense
of this word. This is a really beautiful question. I think you really are, like, you got the gist of what's going on in ACT now. Like, we know the category theory is a really good tool set for these things, but we have sort of like a feeling, and we still have to prove to ourselves why this is really so good. Okay, so conceptually it makes sense. Philosophically, it makes super sense. But so what are we going to do? Are we just like going to describe a lot of things from applied sciences using category theory, or are we going to also contribute to these sciences? And I think we have like horses on both races at the moment. So, the first thing is, for sure we can like do an awesome job in describing stuff, and this is already apparent in many of the subfields of applied category theory, starting from cybernetics that we've seen today. But also on the other side, which is much more interesting and challenging, I think we can picture things in which ways in which category theory can help. So I take my thing, because that's what I know. So there's two projects that I have in mind in long term. The first one is model checking, which I think is maybe the most practical use for this stuff. So model checking is this general thing that people do, which is you have a model which is brought in some kind of formal language, which is usually some kind of programming language or a specific domain, specific language, things like that. So you have a formal specification of something and you want to prove properties of this, okay? So you have your operating system of the Curiosity rover, you want to prove that it never grinds to a halt just by itself, or that if the conditions are so and so, then it's going to do whatever they have to do, and so on. So, and this is very hard at the moment because we don't have good description of systems. So imagine you have to describe the whole Curiosity rover all at once. It's a mess. Okay. So something which is much more compelling is to do it compositionally. Okay. So you want to prove properties of each of the subparts. Okay. So each of the teams working on such a complex systems know what their like specific subparts should do and how they should interface the others, and they can prove stuff about those. And what we are lacking at the moment is a reliable way to put those descriptions together. Okay, so if all the teams that NASA are developing the next Mars rover were checking their own subsystem, they could not do anything with that, because when the system is composed together, you have to throw away all your model checking. You have to start from scratch. So one interesting thing that we can try to do, we're still not at that. I mean, we're seeing it on at the horizon, but if we have now good composition description of systems, what can we say about their properties? Can we actually put like, can we describe the way that systems interact in a like well enough to be able to also bring this knowledge to the properties they satisfy? Okay, and this could be really a huge thing, okay, because model checking is super important, and the more model checking we can do, the better we can actually use the technology that we have now for solving problems in critical areas. So as an aside, a spin-off of this quest is now we have emergence of machine learning in many, many field of application, that there's a lot of fear because machine learning can tell you how it reaches a decision. So it's not like programming. It's like training. So you have to trust the person you train that they're going to do the thing they are supposed to do, and they're not going to go off to whatever creative thing they imagine at the moment. Okay.
Launch missiles.
Yeah, launch missile, but even like driving around the streets, I think it's crazy that there are like completely crazy there are self-driving cars at the moment on the street, because you can't tell anything about what they do. Like the only thing they can do about that is they can say about that, oh, they drove like a billion miles and they killed nobody, so they must be good, right? And you're like, yes, but can we do better? And I think it's exciting that we have good compositional descriptions and good analytic and like conceptual treatment of what a machine learning model is, which espouses with the prison. Like if we're able to do the other thing, I'm sure there's a marriage that could be very profitable there in doing some kind of model checking for learning systems. Okay, so for cybernetic systems at the end of the day. So that's my two interesting things that I'd like to do one day.
We're pretty far over time and losing people who have other obligations. Yeah, but Matteo, do you mind if I ask you a final question?
No, I'm really happy to continue this conversation as long as you want, people.
Okay, so my research is based on model checking and in the security domain. And I do program synthesis, but in a very constrained environment where a model checker is actually the only tool I really need for the synthesis step. Because I'm synthesizing an attack strategy against some sort of network. And like, in essence, the strategy only needs to have at least one winning execution. It doesn't need every execution to be winning. And therefore a single violation is sufficient to like synthesize the strategy in some sense. I've been recently reading about program sketching as like an alternative technique that I could use for some of the things I'm interested in attacking. And in program sketching, you have a program that's complete that does something. And then you have another program that's incomplete. It has some holes in it, like to-do statements in the code. And you use something like an SMT solver in order to try to determine how to fill in those incomplete sections with terms drawn from a you know, Brockensnauer format grammar or something along these lines. In particular, it seems to me that like in the cyber-physical domain, you could articulate some fairly interesting problems using these feedback systems you presented today, and then have like a sketching problem where basically one of the functions or two of the functions within some composition of systems are undefined, and you have some notion like minimize the loss on this particular wire or something like that, and you try to determine the, you know, the resulting function to fill in the blank part based off of that constraint. So it seems clear that like you could articulate problems that I find interesting using the kind of vocabulary you presented today, but it's unclear to me if doing so would help solve those problems in any way, or if it would just kind of make a pretty picture on a whiteboard and then I'm like still just as lost in terms of how to solve the problems as I was in the first place. So do you have any thoughts about like whether or not articulating things using whether it's categorical games or feedback systems or whatever, maybe would yield ways to simplify the problem of filling in the unknown functions within the diagram? If I know the diagram, but I don't know some of the functions.
So I didn't exactly get like what's the goal of this. Like, so once you have these holes and and so on. So the goal is to synthesize a strategy. Is this correct?
So like for instance, let's say that I can move a magnet at high speed close to a spinning hard drive, and like in some way this causes some sort of effect on the hard drive that is like a side channel attack on the computer, right? So I can like model this with differential equations, and the classical approach would be to use like hybrid automata with a tool like FlowStar or something that's kind of built around hybrid systems, hybrid automata. And then the question would be like, what is the correct way for me to like wiggle the magnet such that I induce a failure in the hard drive? But you could articulate that as like the way I wiggle the magnet is sort of a function that takes you from time and where the magnet is right now to where the magnet should be in the next time step. But I don't know what that function is. I only know that it should exist. And then I know the rest of the system, and I know where the function lies in terms of its inputs and outputs. And now I have a synthesis problem, which is to synthesize that function such that the resulting hard drive fails. And I have some formal definition of failure that's like super easy to detect, whether it's with maybe a loss function, or it could be with like a Bucci automaton, if it's with LTL or whatever, it doesn't really matter.
Okay. So I think the answer is, this would help you to like specify the problem, but not really to like go there and solve it.
Okay.
Let me see. So like we have good facilities to like say, like we have a hole here, or like something which is, as you've seen like in these diagrams, is parametrized.
Yeah.
Like, okay, there's some kind of dynamics which depends on the choice you do.
Right.
And so I can imagine like you specifying your system and putting holes here and there, and then you fit this thing into something that solves the problem. Okay.
Right.
So what this can buy you more than like any other way to specify it is that it can highlight a formal correspondence with another kind of problem which you happen to know how to solve, or to solve better. Okay. Like for example, like in this world of cybernetics, we realized that machine learning systems are kind of like universal cybernetic systems. Like most cybernetic systems behave like things that learn, and the same goes the other way around. Like you can take any like say doctrine of cybernetic system and say, oh, everything is like that. Okay, like everything is sort of like a game. Everything is sort of like an Hamiltonian system, and so on. And so this allows like cross-pollination of solution methods. Okay, you know how to like how to work out the solution of an equation of motion. It turns out that this is formally the same as training a machine learning model. So it might be that some person has a very good solution to your problem, but just never realized you were talking about the same problem all the time. Okay, so that's something that could, in principle, arise. Okay, so something we are also seeing on the horizon is having some kind of more like abstract versions of gradient descent. Okay, which work on things which are not differential manifolds. So in that sense, then you can say, oh, I have my problem, which is completely discrete and maybe even more bizarre, but it turns out that we work out a machinery that makes it not just analogous to a machine learning problem, but even solvable with the same techniques, provided you interpret it in the right way. So I think it's this sort of like, I don't know how to say this, but it's like you take a problem and you sort of go around it until you find the way to enter it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's kind of what you do, right? Trying to find.
Yeah, it makes breaches. Me want to have like a database where I can like plug in some categorical representation, and then it would automatically tell me other things that are equivalent. But obviously,
that'd be cool.
Cannot happen. That'd be cool.
I mean that's something I think eventually will happen, because if and this is going to happen if we get a lot of formalized mathematics. It's not just like good because we know it is true, but people are starting to realize it also like changes the way we can do mathematics because we actually have like data we can look at to say how, oh, say, okay, now how many things like this type are there in mathematics? You can manipulate mathematics as an object, which I think is a very powerful idea. So maybe you see, maybe in 20 years, it's something impossible. You can just like query how many categories equivalent to these are there. And then some program tells you like what's in the literature at least, which tells you which is what you do. Okay, Excel with different, with different language. Yeah, very I would love to give like more practical examples, but this is still very much in its infancy. So all I can say is like on the horizon, I see doing this, but we're still not there. So at the moment I can just draw pretty pictures. That's more or less the most I could do.
Well, we appreciate it. Kai and Artem, is there any last thing you'd like to ask before we wrap this up?
Nope.
Okay. Cool. Well, Matteo, thank you so much for joining us. This was a blast. I've been sort of passively following some of this research via the research channel called Twitter for a while and
oh, yeah.
find it all quite interesting. I'm sure that more people will watch this online once it's posted. So we appreciate your time and keep up the good work.
Same. Thank you very much again. This was a fantastic conversation and I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks, Matteo.
Okay.